Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We have reached the end of another week of lockdown and it is time to ask the big questions once more on the only place where you can hear the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It did not surprise me one jot to find yesterday that trust in television journalism has gone to minus 40 on the Richter scale. There are no more people in the world who are more untrusted by this population of this country than television journalists. Is it any wonder that more and more people are flocking to talk radio in order to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Question one, why on earth is this ludicrous party on Westminster Bridge being allowed to continue for the second week in a row where police officers, NHS workers, and sundry sycophants gather for a clapping session, completely ignoring social distancing rules and effectively putting lives in danger? Question two, why are the rest of us being prevented from seeing our own children, our elderly relatives, and even our pets while these Muppets completely ignore the law that we are being ordered to obey? And why can't businesses reopen under these same conditions? After all, if you can stand on a bridge next to somebody, why can't you stand outside a pub next to somebody and have a beer, for heaven's sake? This morning, we'll be speaking to Anthony Brown MP, a member of the Treasury Select Committee, to find out what is going to be done about the banks that are refusing to loan money to small businesses and what is being done for those workers who fall between the cracks because they started a new job in March. After all, it's not their fault. If you've got any questions, please let us know what they are so we can ask them on your behalf. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll visit France and Spain to get the latest on their lockdown easing and what life is like on the streets of Madrid and Paris. Plus, Georgie Frost, consumer journalist, will join us with some news about the pub businesses, and she'll answer your consumer questions about TV subscription services as well, because you can save some money there absolutely right now. Because it's Friday, it's time for another sparkling edition of the Perrier Awards with Marta Malagon, the highlight of my week. Of course, I'm hoping to win quite a few of them. We might get an update from Malibu and or Hollywood and or the Chateau Marmont, because of course the Meghan Markle and Prince Harry lawsuit case starts today in the courts of this country. And as ever, we want to hear your stories out there from the front line of the lockdown. Your stories, your knowledge and your problems are all very important to us, so please do get in touch. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, April the 24th. It's hard to believe that we've only got another week to go until we get into May, for heaven's sake. And in 2 weeks' time, we may find out from Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who could be back at work as early as next week, when the lockdown might start to be eased. But let's talk now to Anthony Brown and welcome him as Conservative MP for South Cambridgeshire, member of the Treasury Select Committee. Welcome back to the show, Anthony.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. I've got to start, I'm afraid, I want to ask you about the business side of things, but I've got to start with this business on Westminster Bridge last night. After what happened last week, after Cressida Dick apologised, I thought, well, we're not going to see that again. How on earth is it allowed to go on like this?
That's a very good question. Everyone should observe the social distancing rules. I was surprised that it happened again. And I think Cressida Dick should answer questions about why it was allowed to happen.
Yeah, and why on earth are we having sort of police officers and members of the NHS clapping themselves effectively? I mean, I'm all for congratulating the NHS and saying thank you, but I mean, I didn't realise that it was a sort of self-aggrandisement moment where you clap your own ambulance drivers.
Well, look, I mean, the NHS staff are doing an absolutely amazing job, and I think a lot of them are under real pressure. And if you imagine going into work every day and thinking, actually, they might, you know, a lot of them have had colleagues who have died. They're going to work thinking they might contract this virus, they might come home and infect their family and so on.
They are why are they standing so close to one another on Westminster Bridge?
For a moment of relief, we have to sort of clap each other about it. But I agree, they should, in public, at least They need to observe social distancing rules the rest of us have to observe, and they need to set a role model for that as well.
Doesn't this kind of gathering have to be banned? I mean, I've been having people getting in touch with me since last night, people who run businesses, people who run clubs and pubs, saying we can't open. We are being told we might not be able to open for the rest of the year. And yet, these people are effectively having a party every Thursday night.
Well, as I said, I don't think it should have happened. They should have had the social distancing rules, as you mentioned. Cressida Dick had apologised for it last time. I'm surprised she didn't enforce it this time.
It's incredible. So is it down to her to enforce it? Is it down to the government? Is it down to Sadiq Khan? Somebody needs to ban it.
Well, it's the police are the enforcement authorities, obviously.
I'm right.
across the whole country. And they're the ones who are upholding the law and the regulations on this. And different police forces have interpreted it in slightly different ways in different parts of the country. And I'm sure you've covered some of that in the programme in the past.
Well, these would be the same police who chased a friend of mine down an empty beach in order to hand her a piece of paper to say she shouldn't be there on her own.
Yeah, so I think what needs to be, and when I've been talking to my local council about it, and there's been lots of questions about the police in my area of the country and elsewhere, is what you need is good old-fashioned common sense. So what we have here is a whole load of guidelines. Normally, these would have been developed over years. We would have thought about every detail in every single different situation, and it would be 1,000 pages long, and no one would know the detail. What the government's aiming to do here is to stop the spread of infection. That's the whole point and objective here. And if somebody is doing something like walking along a beach by themselves, then clearly they're not at risk of spreading infection, and the police should apply common sense to that.
Yeah.
If people are gathering in groups where they're very close to each other and they are clearly increasing the risk of infection and there's no justification for them doing it, then the police should intervene and stop them doing that, uphold the guidelines.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the problems here is actually in a lot of circumstances, police haven't applied common sense, and those are the ones which have caused concern. So, like, for example, in my constituency, the police sent out a message about very glad to see that people weren't buying non-essential items in the Tesco.
Yes,
and
I remember that.
The aisles and checked.
Yeah, I actually highlighted that on this show, and before the end of the show, they'd apologised and pulled the tweet.
I mean, if you go and buy something that isn't essential, like, I don't know, an Easter egg, it really does not increase the chance of infection. And I'm glad to say the Kempshire Police did backtrack on that.
Because the other problem here, Anthony, is I'm getting a lot of tweets from people this morning saying, why should we obey the rules? You know, some people saying, I wasn't able to see my elderly relative before she died. I haven't seen my own children for 4 weeks because I think it's irresponsible to drive 50 miles down to Sussex to see them. You know, and people are beginning to say, why the hell should we obey these rules if the police are not doing it themselves?
Well, absolutely. And that's why it's really important that all people in public positions display behaviour in a way that expects the broader public to. It is really difficult for everyone. I know everyone's making sacrifices. I haven't seen my elderly parents since the whole lockdown began, much as I'd like to and they would like to. We're all making sacrifices, and it would be a lot better, easier to keep everyone along with it if everyone in the public position behaves responsibly. And that's why I think things like on the Westminster Bridge, much as I understand the need for relief from the stresses, it's important for medical staff and the police to show the rest of the public that we are all in this together.
Absolutely right. Let's talk about the business side of things, which is what we wanted to get you on for in the first place. We had quite a lot of people contacting us yesterday from small businesses. Happy that the furlough system seems to be working reasonably well, although some people are still waiting for a bit of the money to come through. But very unhappy about the fact that they've gone to the banks to ask for loans, short-term or otherwise, to get them through this particularly troubling period, not because they can't pay their workers, but because they have other overheads which they need to pay, and without any money coming in whatsoever, they need to get the loans. But the banks, I'm being told, are turning them down for loans, sometimes because of the fear that they don't believe the business is either viable or able to pay them back, or two, because they don't think that, this is the right time to lend them the money. And it seems to me to be a travesty of a situation which the banks are taking advantage of.
Yeah, I have the same concerns. I have companies in my constituency who come to me and say and complain about going to the bank and not getting a loan when they clearly feel they're justified. So there's a whole range of different issues here. So
yeah.
One is that the rules of the scheme have been changed by the Treasury about 2 weeks ago to make it easier for the bank to make sure the banks lend the government-backed loan as first resort. Because when the scheme was originally designed, the banks are only meant to give the government-backed loan to companies that couldn't get a commercial loan. So the banks are required to do a commercial loan, which is a lot more difficult and arduous, and they want to make sure they get their money back, etc.
Right.
That's changed. So now when businesses go in there, The government-backed loan, the coronavirus business interruption loan, is meant to be the first option they get. Mm. But it still goes to companies that were previously judged as being viable, that were viable at the end of last year. And not all businesses would be. I mean, there are some businesses that are about to collapse that probably shouldn't get the loan. But the trouble is the banks are still guaranteeing 20% of the loan. And that means they're required under current regulation to go through a whole load of due diligence procedures that can be quite arduous, asking for lots of information about the company's financial track record, their business plans, et cetera, et cetera. And the businesses are on the cliff edge saying, I just need the money.
Exactly right. So is it possible for the Treasury to empower the banks to be able to be a bit more flexible and a bit more speedy?
Absolutely. So we've actually... as a Treasury Select Committee, we have grilled the regulators on this and the banking industry on this. The regulators, the Financial Conduct Authority, are loosening the rules to make it easier for the banks to lend money. So the banks themselves don't have to jump through so many hoops to do it. But also the Treasury has confirmed that they are thinking about doing a 100% guarantee for the smallest businesses. And that's a huge step because that means that the banks no longer have to go through all their own due diligence processes and check that the companies are creditworthy. It means they can get the loans out. There is a moral hazard there. There is a risk they'll lend to lots of companies that can't repay it, and the government, by which we mean the taxpayers, will end up picking up the bill. And you certainly don't want to end up with, you know, absolutely vast unpaid bills at the end of this.
So it's sure.
Getting the middle road.
No, we get that. But I mean, but as we appear to be seeing movement in terms of a slight lifting of the lockdown, I mean, there's lots of pictures in the papers today of food outlets reopening, of people being out and about a little bit more. There seems to be more traffic on the roads. And there's a lot going on. So it may well be that if we can continue sort of propping people up for a few more weeks, it might be that they can start making money again, and the sooner the better, really. But as far as those people who called me yesterday who have been refused loans, some of them because they were told that their credit ratings weren't good enough and that kind of thing, should they go back to that bank then and say, look, you know, we've had a word with the Treasury Select Committee?
I've definitely had businesses in my constituency where I've had this conversation. They first went to the bank, they said no, but actually the rules in the banks are changing on a not quite daily basis, but every few days.
Right.
And it might well be that it's worth the businesses going back to their bank and saying, what about now? The other thing is, go around to different banks. You don't have to go to the bank where you've got your personal or your business account. You can go to other banks. And I know a lot of businesses do that. In Britain, we've got a sort of cultural tradition that we only go to the bank where we have our current account for loans. Right. But actually, you can go to any bank for a loan. And the other thing is you can go to, and I've been helping businesses in my constituency with this, if you think you're really being unfairly turned down for a loan, you can go to your MP, and your MP can escalate it to the bank headquarters. And MPs up and down the country are doing this.
Well, that's helpful. Thank you very much indeed. The final thing, I suppose, that's still a bit of a bugbear for some people is this business of the new job starters, the people who originally were getting a job sometime in late February, early March. I know the date was moved, I think, to March the 19th. Is there anything for those people who are still finding it difficult? Because there are those who have been in touch again with me and this show to say that, you know, they've tried to go back to their old employer and get rehired in order to be furloughed. That's not working because it's only a voluntary scenario anyway. What can they do?
So it is difficult. As you said, the government changed the deadline to March the 19th. Yeah. And the reason for that deadline being put in place to start with was because of the risk of fraud, that you could have had people sort of inventing.
Yes, and I totally understand that. I totally get that.
And putting them on furlough. So that's why there was a limit to how far they could change the deadline. But I totally accept there are still people who fall between the cracks.
Yeah.
And one of the... I mean, a bigger picture here. I keep being asked by constituents, but also, you know, different people on radio shows like this, saying that there's gaps in the system here. What the government has done in the last few weeks, in the last month, is what would normally take years. They've done it in weeks. And there's a trade-off between simplicity and complexity and speed. Like, the more complex you make a program, the longer it will take to roll out.
Yeah.
And the government decided, we've just got to do this big, do it quickly. And that means being really, really simple. So things like the grants of businesses, in the hospitality sector, £25,000 grant if your rateable value is between £15,000 and £51,000. It's a really simple scheme. It means it could be rolled out in a couple of weeks. If they started tapering it and started doing all sorts of other things to it, then it would have taken, you would have trained up people in district and local authorities to work out how the tapering works. You'd have had a more complex software, and it would have just delayed the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
For people whose rateable value is above £51,000, which apparently will count most pubs in London, you know, there's a lot of people missing out on that.
No, there are, absolutely. And it is a hard cutoff. But it was done because if you had a tapering thing, then you a tapering system, you would have had to train all the boroughs in London and the district councils outside London in how to operate the tapering. They'd have to get software that could manage the tapering, etc. And it would just have delayed everything. Whereas if you just got a single amount, which you don't have to means test effectively apart from a rateable value, then you can just get it out. So that's why there are gaps in a way you wouldn't normally get in government policies. For the people who are changing jobs that you're asking about, so they can go back to their old employer and ask them to furlough, but as you say, it's not mandatory, and that is difficult. They still have obviously access to universal credit, which isn't as much money. Absolutely get that, but there will be some people who still fall behind the cracks, and I and other MPs will keep raising this with the government and saying we've got to think about these people.
Yes, and anyone who is in that situation, I guess you would advise also to get in touch with your MP?
Absolutely. I mean, the MPs are all, among of all parties, are working absolutely flat out, helping constituents in all sorts of positions. But and the people who do fall between the cracks, I mean, the universal credit is there. It has been made a lot more generous. The access to it has been made far quicker. People are getting the money, a lot more people are getting the money up front. Mm. And so, you know, has been changed so that people who do fall between the cracks will get far better support than they would normally get.
Right. And Matt Hancock,
and hopefully, as you say, this will be a really extraordinary steep downturn we have now. I mean, unprecedented in 300 years. Hopefully it'll come back very quickly so that people won't be in this precarious position.
I mean, Matt Hancock was on Julie Hartley-Brewer's show this morning and very honestly just said he didn't know when the lockdown would be lifted, which I think is a refreshing way to answer a question for a politician. So long may that continue. But also, what's your sense of what's being said inside of Cabinet about whether there is a row about how soon we should do it? And I know the stock answer is, well, we have to take the science and the evidence and all of that. But, you know, clearly there is a decision that needs to be made about the economy.
And it is an extraordinarily complicated decision because there are so many different factors here. And it's based on something that we don't actually know, which is the science behind the coronavirus. We're learning more and more about it all the time. So, you know, will easing lockdown in various ways, will that lead to a resurgence in the epidemic? Because I think one thing that absolutely everyone agrees on is that if you had a new outbreak and had to do a new lockdown, that would be an incredible knock to confidence. Because businesses, if they know the lockdown's coming to an end, then you can be optimistic. You can get things going again. You can, you know, rehire the staff, get the systems going, start selling. But if you just think, well, we're going to lock down again in a few weeks, then it will, really damage confidence far more. So that's why the government said they've got to be sure there isn't a greater lockdown. But it is and it isn't really a trade-off between lives and jobs, which is sometimes for trade, because actually letting the epidemic sort of resurge again, you know, if that happened, as I say, it would cost more jobs in the long run. Yeah. And people having jobs is good for their health as well. It's good for having a growing economy, is good for life expectancy, and good for, you know, having people unemployed is bad for their health as well. So it's what the government has to do, and what it is doing is taking everything into account. So the actual coronavirus epidemic itself, the impact health-wise, as well as economically, of rising unemployment, and so on. You put all those factors together, and what the government needs to do then is come out with an easing of the lockdown when it can. And as you say, we don't know how the coronavirus epidemic is going to progress, but clearly we have plateaued. And in what ways can it ease the lockdown without leading to an increase in infections again? So, you know, people are talking about schools, obviously, or, you know, are there certain businesses like garden centres that can reopen without that? And that's the sort of thing that, clearly as a country we need to think about.
Absolutely. Anthony, thank you very much indeed. Anthony Brown, Conservative MP for South Cambridgeshire, member of the Treasury Select Committee. For those people who were concerned about this yesterday, who tweeted me and who called into the show, I hope that was helpful. Basically, the bottom line is go back to the banks, tell them that the rules have changed, tell them that you are entitled to a loan, and if that doesn't work, go to your local MP, get them to basically sort of barter on your behalf, persuade, negotiate, do whatever you can. So do not just sit there and think that it's all going to go horribly down the Swanee.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham, Talk Radio.
Dr. Mike Smith, a very good morning and welcome back to the show.
Oh, morning to you too, Mike, and to the listener.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, before we go anywhere at all, let's just have a listen to Matt Hancock, who was speaking to Julie Hartley-Brewer this morning as she was talking to him about the lockdown.
It's just so tempting to speculate, but no, the truth is that nobody knows. because it depends on how people behave and it depends on the progress of the virus. And I know that that is a, I know that's a boring answer, but it is the truth. And
it's
so
an
we've just
answer.
Got, we've got to keep it, and we've got to keep the measures in place until it's safe to change them.
Matt Hancock there saying that he just doesn't know precisely when the lockdown will be lifted, which I think is very candid and very admirable, really, for a politician, Mike.
Yeah, it is, indeed. Yeah, I mean, what he's saying in everyday language is that at present, you know, if you take 10 people who've got the virus and they pass it on to less than 10 people, then the reinfection rate is less than 1, which it is at the moment,
right.
The new infections are going to plateau and then fall. If they only pass it on to, that those 10 people only pass it on to one because of good distancing and the washing of the hands and all the other procedures, then it's going to fall even more rapidly. What he's saying, I think, is backed up by the fact that he doesn't want to give too much hope at the moment, although I'm quite hopeful that what we're seeing at the moment will see a reasonably sharp drop-off. And, you know, one can't be sure about that. And if you, as the Secretary of State, introduce that sort of idea too early, then people are going to get a little bit lax about washing hands and distancing and all the other procedures that we have to go through at the moment, which is most unreal. And, of course, is damaging to the economy. And so politicians at some stage are going to take the economists' advice, perhaps as almost as heavily as they're taking the excellent scientific and medical advice they're being given at the moment.
Yes.
In order to see that the country doesn't go bust.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the way that we see these figures coming out every day, I mean, what can we as ordinary lay people make of the fact that, you know, the number of infections and the infection rate is going down? Because I suppose a question that I get asked quite a lot by people is, how do we know, for example, that the virus is spreading less quickly? Is it because the number of people being infected is coming down, or is it because of the number of people dying that's coming down?
No, it's because the number of people being reinfected is going down, Mike.
Right.
You see, as I say, if you think in terms of one person, it sounds a little bit more geeky. But if you think in terms of 10 people,
yeah.
If 10 people with the virus pass it on to less than 10,
right.
Then you're going to have a situation when they get over, as most of them will, fortunately, when they get over their condition, the ones they pass it on to, when they get over their condition, they're passing it to fewer than their number
right.
is, then, of course, that will go down like that, the reinfection rate. And that's, you know, Professor Whitty keeps pointing that out, that
right.
it is less than one, which
okay.
is highly fortunate.
That is good, isn't it? And does,
yeah,
that, it does that mean that there's an element of herd immunity going on then?
Well, the herd immunity is not the big factor at the moment. It's the numbers of new cases falling off. They're not able to properly test for antibodies at the moment because the test is wanting. I can't remember exactly why, but it is. So what they're testing for is the antigen. Now, without getting too difficult, the
right.
antigen is the chemical in the blood, if you like, that stimulates our own natural immunity antibodies to rise.
Yeah.
The antibody test that they have at the moment isn't very reliable, and therefore they're using antigen tests to see how many people, if you like, are impervious to further infection.
Yes.
It does get very technical stuff and difficult to communicate in everyday language.
Yes, because, of course, also one of the announcements yesterday from Matt Hancock was that people who are key workers will now be able to get the test as well as NHS workers. But unfortunately, the human beast being what it is, it would appear that more people than required have now applied to do those tests. And I suspect it's people who just want to have the test kit in case they need to do the test. But this is a test to see whether you actually have it, as opposed to the antigen test. And unfortunately,
yeah.
there's not a lot of point, it seems to me, in taking that test unless you have symptoms.
Well, yes, there is, in fact, because, in fact, many people that get the virus don't have symptoms. They, you know, I can't remember what proportion is, but it is a considerable proportion.
Yeah.
And if they're doing 51,000 tests a day at the moment, within the coming days, coming certainly before the end of the month, they're going to be doing 100,000. Now, if they do that and then do the track and trace business, they'll be able to contain it again in another way, in that they can track people, especially if they use this app on the mobile phones, that they've been in contact with, the people infectious have been in contact with, so they can then lock them down for the 14 days so that they then don't pass it on. So that's another way in which they can control it out over and above the lockdown for all of us, you know, locking down that particular group of people who they can show definitely are in the position to be able to pass it on.
Yes, but of course, if I took a test, right, because I'm now entitled to as a key worker, and I was negative, I would learn nothing, wouldn't I? I'd learn nothing.
No, but the statisticians, the epidemiologists would learn a lot because they'll know what proportion. And that comes into it too in planning for the immediate future. You know, what proportion are not infected compared with those that are? You know, it really does, when you mention statistics to the average individual, which most of us fall into that category, it's a switch off because it is a very technical subject to try and deal with and to try and explain to in everyday language.
Yes, it is tricky, isn't it? Because that's the thing. We still, I mean, every medic that I speak to says, you know, there's still an awful lot we don't really know. But it seems that we've learned a lot in the last 2 to 3 months, haven't we?
Oh, yes. Yes, a massive amount. And I mean, if we were to get another pandemic of a different coronavirus, and this one is a highly infectious, you know, much more so than the flu one, which is another coronavirus of a different nature, though, we'd be better prepared in epidemiological terms to know what to do about it quickly. I mean, if in fact, if China was in a sort of lockdown, and not a lockdown, a denial initially, and not claiming it wasn't what it was. Had we had access to it then, a lot could have been done to save the whole world getting done in the way that it has. And we must prepare for that in the future so that if any country gets any sort of suggestion that something like this is about to start because it's transferred from animals into the humans being affected as well, then, you know, we'd be better in a better position to deal with it.
Yes, of course. I mean, the trouble with the Chinese situation, of course, is because we can't really trust exactly everything that comes out of there, you can't necessarily base any science on what they're telling us, because I don't for a minute believe that they somehow had fewer deaths from COVID-19 than we had.
Yeah, well, no.
That can't be right, can it?
No. The people that have gone into it would agree with you, certainly. Yeah. And I think that's so, yes.
Right. And the World Health Organization hasn't exactly played a blinder here either.
Well, no, there's been, but mind you, to give them their due and to give everybody their due, initially when it hit us, they were all in the dark because of the denial by China. Had they known early on, the WHO and all the other experts would have been well onto it. But in fact, they didn't have that initial warning, which would have been the real starter gun for all that should have followed.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as looking around the rest of the world, I mean, we're going to speak to people in later in this hour in France and in Spain. What are you seeing, and if you are seeing anything encouraging, what are you making of the Swedish situation, for example?
Sweden didn't get too big of a problem, did they, from memory?
Well, basically, they haven't had a massive problem, certainly no worse than ours, and some would say even better than ours, but it's a more rural country than ours as well. But what they haven't done is shut everything down. They've had restaurants remaining open, people sitting further apart. But, I mean, there are arguments being made for a lightening of that, you know, so that we could have the economy recovering.
Yeah. No, it's a much smaller population as well, and as you say, in less dense places. I mean, Stockholm's probably the only dense population in the country, I would have thought. Yeah. And you know, that's a great...
Well, I suppose Malmö's a reasonable-sized city, but it's not huge.
Yeah, I suppose it is. That's the second one, yeah. Having been to Sweden decades ago, I remember it well, and how Stockholm did vary when one got a chance to look at the rest of the country. I was doing temporary work out there, and I think that's the problem. That's the probable reason, is the population rather than the virus and the individuals.
But that is the other difficulty with this whole sort of the numbers game, because different countries seem to be measuring things slightly differently. It may not be very different, but slightly differently in terms of, you know, we keep hearing, for example, the care home problem in this country is probably going to be worse than the number of deaths from people dying of COVID-19 in hospitals. And yet that's not really being counted, because the world measure is basically people in hospitals dying. So it's a bit hit and miss, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I hope we learn from it. And as a result, as I say, I'm better prepared should anything like this happen again, and which I hope it doesn't. I mean, it's you know, you've got to go back really to 1918 to see anything like this, you know, when 50 million people died because of flu. at the end of the great First World War.
And yeah. I mean, imagine how different the world is now. I mean, had the Chinese people not been travelling quite as far as they have been doing in the last few years, and as they were doing around about Christmas time, you know, perhaps we wouldn't have had quite such bad of an outbreak in the rest of the world anyway.
No, quite right, indeed, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, that's another factor to be taken into account in the future.
It is indeed. Now, what did you make of the President of the United States outburst the other day? I mean, even his own medical officials seemed to be a bit alarmed by what he had to say. But, I mean, there are those who are saying he's not actually calling for people to inject themselves with disinfectant. But what do you think he was trying to say?
Well, I hope he was trying to say that if you got something that would kill the virus, which was compatible with the way in which our bodies work, the physiology, that would be a step forward. But just to say a disinfectant, I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, I suppose it's because for most of us, I'm assuming he's talking about a bottle of Dettol. But of course, he might be using the word in a different way. In fact, I think we've got the clip. Let's have a listen to it.
Disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute. 1 minute, and is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see, it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me.
So it's not quite him saying you should be basically getting yourself a needle and putting Dettol in it and sticking it into your arm.
No, I mean, I hope what he's saying is there's something which would destroy the virus whilst not destroying the body, not doing any harm to the body. Well, of course, you know, it would be ideal. There is research going on at the present to try to find something that will do that. In the past, in the case of viruses, we've always relied upon giving an antigen, that's to say something that will make our body's immune system get to work and produce antibodies.
Yes.
And we've relied on that, as we do when we have those vulnerable have the yearly flu injection.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily... We have the antivirals, but they don't work... I mean, they work well in the case of HIV, for instance. If we could find an antiviral, I suppose you could... To protect him, say that you could consider that to be a disinfectant, i.e. it disinfects the individual with that virus.
Yes.
But it's certainly not a disinfectant in the Dettol.
No, of course not. And what about the vaccine talk that we're hearing? Because a lot of people seem to doubt the efficacy of doing a sort of rush job on any vaccine and trying to make it ready sooner than it would otherwise be. And therefore, so it wouldn't be ready in September. It would more likely be next year or maybe the year after.
Well, yeah, you've just got to be sure it's safe, and that's one of the reasons why they have to do so many tests. And that very able, not just in communication, but as a virologist, the professor in Oxford, who started these tests before the rest of the world. I mean, I hope she's going to cut the time that it would normally take because of the seriousness of this pandemic, and also the fact that they're pulling out all stops to get through that process as quickly as they can.
Mm.
Now, if they do get a safe antigen, which is what the injection is, so that they can give it to people, then our own antibodies will build up against it. And rather like the yearly injection for the flu for the vulnerable, we'll have protection of the population against this COVID-19.
Yeah, absolutely right. Dr. Mike Smith, thank you very much indeed. Regular commentator on the NHS, of course.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning. with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We are now at that time of the day where it's just after 12:30. It's time for our homeschooling section. So if you haven't done it yet, get your children around the radio. Have them listen to the words of wisdom that you're about to hear today. We're looking into primates and we are joined, of course, by Chris Packham, wildlife presenter and campaigner. He's got a TV show coming out the weekend all about primates, lemurs, monkeys, bush babies, great apes, absolutely astonishing creatures, amazing creatures. And Chris is going to tell us all about them. Chris, a very good afternoon to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mike. How are you?
I'm not bad, actually, considering the vagaries of the world at the moment. But I suppose you would have shot this a while ago. But I suppose that the natural world is in a kind of interesting place at the moment, isn't it? Because of all the slowing down of human activity, I suppose.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, obviously, we can speak with some observation here in the UK, and we are seeing those species which are typically influenced by human disturbance in our countryside as likely to prosper this year. Far fewer people walking their dogs in the countryside, so ground nesting birds will probably have a bumper season as they're disturbed by them. Obviously, in urban and suburban areas, less petrochemical consumption is going on through vehicle transport, and as a consequence of that, we know that bees and other pollinators can smell flowers more effectively, so they're likely to be prospering, and the flowers, of course, too, that they're pollinating. The one problem we have, Mike, is that typically at this time of year, all of us amateur naturalists and professionals too will be out in the field monitoring the distribution and populations of wildlife, and we're not able to do that. So a lot of the effects of this may be hidden to us, but due to the unavailability of data, because we can't get out there and everyone's behaving themselves at the moment.
Well, most of us are anyway, but there's still a few idiots out there, but never mind. Let's ignore them. Let's talk about primates, because this is a fascinating series by the looks of it. 28 filming expeditions across the world, you know, all the way from Sumatra to Brazil to Morocco. Tell us a bit about what we're going to be seeing.
Well, it's an extraordinary series. It's very beautiful to look at. The camera work is absolutely stunning, and that gives you a chance to immerse yourself in these animals' environments. You really feel like you're there with them. A great range of species. When people think of primates, we normally think of the great apes, the gorillas, bonobos, chimps, orangs, those that we feel the closest affinity to. But they also include the lemurs, the tarsiers, the lorises, the bush babies. And this series does its best to spread an interest across all of these groups of animals. Lots of new science. I mean, science is always ongoing. There's always people out there sticking their noses into other species' business. And there'll be a lot of surprising things. I think, you know, some of the ideas that we had about the way primates lives are going to be turned on their head with this series. So that's good. And obviously conservation too. We know that, you know, 75% of our primates are in decline, 50% in danger of extinction. So, you know, they do need our care. And Programme 3 is very much about conservation and how we're using modern technologies and new ideas to better look after these animals in the wild.
Is there still a problem with gorilla poaching and that kind of thing in the mountains of the Virunga National Park? They've got over 180 rangers have died protecting them. You know, it's a dreadful toll that goes on there, isn't it?
It's extraordinary, isn't it, really? Yeah, we think of ourselves as being on the front line of conservation in the UK, but we've really got no idea. You know, these guys and women too are going out there into the jungle to protect these animals. Tourists come to see them, provide them with a livelihood. We do what we can to properly equip them and train them. But obviously, they're in a very volatile part of the world. You know, Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, all of those areas Uganda have had in our lifetimes a lot of turmoil. So it's been difficult to look after them. What we're worried about at the moment, Mike, if I'm very honest with you, is that there aren't any tourists visiting. So the input, you know, financial input into those communities has dropped off. There won't be the impetus for them to go out and monitor those gorillas every day as they would be doing if they had visitors. And who knows what's going on with the poaching? And that's something that we're very, very worried about.
No, of course. And they're such beautiful creatures, aren't they? They're so, you kind of hesitate to use the word human-like, but they sort of are. You can see emotion in their faces. You can see different expressions in their faces as well whenever I've watched anything about gorillas, and not so much the chimpanzees. But the chimpanzees are also fascinating creatures as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're closest relatives. More than 90% of our DNA is shared with these animals. There are lots of parallels between the way that they live and we live. They're long-lived. They're social animals. They invest a lot in parental care. It takes a long time for their young to reach maturity. They have individual vocalizations, essentially a language. And they communicate facially using their expressions. And one of the unique things that we learn in the series is that chimpanzees are also using gestures.
Right.
So they're using various little repeated behaviours. One of them is dropping stones to communicate to others in their group. And we probably suspected that this would be the case because of their complexity of communication. But it takes a lot of diligent work to go out into the field and watch these and watch the reaction of the other chimps once the gesture's been made. But we've established that. And the other surprising thing, I mean, I'll blow one of the best stories from the first programme, which goes out on Sunday at 8:15, BBC One, is that we typically think of gorillas, the male silverbacks, these huge, powerful, you know, enormously strong animals. And we imagine King Kong and Mighty Joe Young beating their chest. It turns out that the most successful male gorillas in terms of producing more offspring are those which display the greatest degrees of tenderness to their young. So the most cuddly males observed by the females can actually sire five times the number of offspring than those that just stand there beating their chest.
So, interesting.
You know, yeah, it is. It is because, you know, as I said, they're long-lived, and you can just imagine these female gorillas watching over a period of years as one of these young male grows up, looking, you know, at how well he is at looking, you know, after his young, after that, you know, those displays of strength have led to mating, and then they choose that particular male. It's fantastic stuff.
And it is, and I've seen previous programs about chimpanzees and how they can fashion tools out of various things, and they can learn quite quickly. This is possibly going to sound like a really idiotic question. Please tell me if it is. But when the evolution of these creatures goes on, at what point does it stop? Because presumably if we have sort of come in some way from there, at what point does their evolution stop and ours begin, if you like?
It's a great question, actually, and it's not a stupid question, because I think a lot of people are brought up with the idea that evolution has stopped and that we are the be-all and end-all of it. It couldn't be further from the truth. Evolution continues every second of every minute of every day in every species. You know, we are evolving, and so are all of those other species.
I sometimes worry that we're evolving backwards.
Well, devolving in that case.
Yes.
Yeah. And there is a degree of that. Well, certainly culturally, you might argue that that was the case. And cultural evolution is as an important as physiological evolution. But no, it goes on. And we're seeing real changes in our lifetime. And moving away from the primates, I can tell you that, you know, since 1970, the beaks of blue tits and the great tits in the UK have grown in length.
Really?
Because we spend, because we put so much food in feeders for them, as opposed to people on the continent, that the scientific studies that have contrasted the UK and the Netherlands, as it turns out, show that our great tits have grown longer beaks. Other birds that are not migrating as much are shortening their wings.
Mm.
So this is a change in the physiology and the body of these animals in real time. We're talking 25 years. It's quick. You know, evolution is not something that takes millions of years. If there's an opportunity for an animal to prosper, it will take that straight away and make those changes straight away.
No, of course. And I'm quite partial to orangutans and macaques as well, so I can just quite like saying macaque. Have you got a favourite primate by any chance?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I'm drawn to the lemurs.
Right.
So the lemurs are those animals which live on Madagascar, and they are extraordinary in their diversity because Madagascar separated from Africa. A proto-primate went over and evolved into lemurs. They're found nowhere else on Earth.
Right.
Most of them are endangered, but they've occupied all of the different niches, as it were. So this one group of animals does a tremendous range of different things. Some are nocturnal, some are diurnal, some spend a lot of time on the ground, some up in the top of the canopy. And we've got some great lemur behaviour in this. One of the species actually uses ants to produce an insect propellant.
Oh, really?
So it antagonises ants and wipes them onto its fur, and as it's doing so, they spray the fur with formic acid, and this repels mosquitoes. So they're using their own, you know, methods to generate an insect propellant to keep mosquitoes off of them, which is pretty cool. But as I say, in the series, lots of things like that. Capuchins, you mentioned, you know, they're using tools to get lizards out. The macaques are using tools as well, which are really smart. And spider monkeys, you know, female spider monkeys climbing down and choosing very specifically the things they eat. Other species of monkey using squirrels to actually open a fruit which they can't open themselves.
Yeah.
So encouraging the squirrel to do that, and then chasing the squirrel off so they can eat the fruit themselves. So they're quite complex, as you say, relatively intelligent. Certainly the great apes have, you know, cognitive powers are significant. You know, chimpanzees probably the same degree of intelligence as a three and a half year old human child. So they're pretty smart. And again, you know, that sometimes means they're difficult to study. So the team that have made this series worked really hard to meet all the right scientists with their finger on the current pulse of what we're learning about these, and then go out and film it. And as you mentioned, it was all filmed before lockdown. These sorts of programs take several years to make.
Yes.
And we finished it some time ago.
Okay. And how many parts does it have?
Three parts. The latter part is principally about conservation, as I mentioned. There's a great sequence in there with orangs. You'll like that. So you know, obviously, that unfortunately people go into the forest, they shoot the females, they take the youngsters for the pet trade. Some of these are then recovered, and people work very hard to make sure that they get back into the wild and play a functional ecological role. But humans are terrestrial, we're on the ground, so when they're taking them into the forest and teaching them to be wild orangs, they're doing it on the ground. Problem is that orangs are highly arboreal. They spend most of their time in the upper parts of the forest canopy. So they weren't learning to find the right fruits in the right way with the right degrees of efficiency. So what the carers have done is learn to climb. So they've literally got the ropes on and the harnesses and the helmets, and they're hoisting themselves into the very tops of the canopy trees. And these tiny, fragile little young orangs are climbing up the vines and lianas. You know, so it looks quite perilous, but that's what they're, you know, that's what they've evolved to do. And they get up the top there, and they're learning to explore that environment at a much younger age. And this is greatly improving the rehabilitation success of this species in this project. So, you know, we know orangs are in trouble, but we are also coming up with means of getting those that we can back into the wild. And one last thing, this series will offer an opportunity to see a new species of orang, a thing called the Tapa Nui orangutan, which has never been filmed and shown before. So that's really exciting.
Well, I should look forward to it. It's a Sunday night, Chris Packham. It's a show called Primates, 8:15, BBC One. Sounds tremendous. Chris, thanks very much indeed for telling us all about it. We've got much more to do before Ian Collins gets here at 1 o'clock. Guess what? It's going to be the Perrier Awards.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's Friday, it's 12:46, and it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Favourite part of the week where we get to do the Perrier Awards, an homage to my brilliance in broadcasting. And I'm delighted to say we are joined once again by producer Marta Malagón. A very, very good afternoon to you.
Very good afternoon to you. How's it going?
It's good. We've had another good week, I think. We've had some interesting stories, some great guests, some tremendous callers. I'm very happy about it. I'm hoping that I haven't made too many mistakes. But you never know, do you? Really?
I know the answer to this, yes, and I can tell you.
Tragically.
You're not going to be happy. Well, you will.
I don't mind.
We will. Anyway, welcome to
Thank
the
you very much
Awards.
Indeed.
Regular listeners know what's going on, but the new listeners, which we're getting like...
We're getting loads of new listeners, yes.
Hundreds of thousands.
Absolutely.
Every
Thank
week.
You. Welcome to all of you.
Welcome. I should explain, this is where we look back over the past week of the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham Talk Radio and choose our favourite moments, which really means I just basically pick on your mistakes and I have a little bit of fun. But, you know, it's all good. It's all friendly.
That, of course.
As it's tradition, Mike, the first Perrier goes to you, and it's the classic wrong namer of the week.
Which is highly embarrassing to Prince Harry, you know, begging Charles Markle to talk to him.
I love this one because you hear the first bit and you think, oh, this is it, but
No, it's the second bit. But I've worked out why that happened because I was talking to Charles Ray and I was looking at the screen and I could see the name Charles and I just said Charles Markle.
And you could have also easily thought Prince Charles because,
Prince
you know,
Charles,
he's the other, you know, dad of the
Yes, it's
story.
Very true.
So, you know, it is an understandable
It is, of
one.
Course, Thomas Markle.
It is Thomas Markle.
Who happens to be the subject of this court case today.
Yes.
Or he's one of them anyway.
Yes. Well, that'll be an interesting one to watch, won't it?
We're looking forward to it.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Executive editor of the Times Monumenta, Gemma, not Jerry, Godfrey, as you announced last
week. I got it right
week.
This week, I think, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I got the name right. So what, if you found something else wrong with it?
Yeah. She came on the show earlier this week and provided very useful financial advice, and she also provided the clarification of the week.
You know, we're relying on these payments to be able to fund our retirement, and the bigger the gap gets, you know, the bigger, again, the gap gets, you know, the more money that's going to have to be contributed. You also heard, we also heard, yes.
Oh, gosh, that was a long
argue,
clip.
Can't argue with that.
Can't argue that.
The bigger the gap gets, the bigger the gap gets.
The bigger the gap gets.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's completely right.
It's a self-fulfilling comparison
gosh,
in many ways.
Yes, yes.
It's true.
Very good.
Thank you.
Sometimes you use very long words.
Yes.
And I'm like, oof. You know,
sorry.
I need a nap.
Okay.
Don't forget I'm Spanish.
I know. Well, luckily, I can't use long words in Spanish.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I'll teach you some long words in Spanish one day. I could do the homeschooling section,
we could do
maybe.
The homeschooling, yeah. Why
and
not?
I'll do it.
All right.
I'll do it. I'll show you esternocleidomastoideo.
Oi.
Which is the muscle you've got here.
Is it?
Which, I don't know how you call it in English. Yeah, the one
is
here.
Is it like the... I don't know, actually.
I don't know how you
behind the collarbone. The one
yes,
behind.
Yes, the one behind, yeah.
Yeah, hang on, I don't know what you, I don't even know what that is in English.
Well, neither do I. Anyway, I'm doing it again this week.
Yes.
Caller Kenin Ascot wins the Perry for Impression of the Week.
You know that lady over from California? You know what I mean?
Harry!
Yes,
Harry!
Yes.
This is a guy doing an impersonation of me doing an impersonation of Meghan Markle.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
All we need is someone now doing an impersonation of Ken.
Ken.
An impersonation of you.
We could do this
Meghan.
All. Yeah, we could do this all week.
So, you know, 03444991000.
Well done,
thank
Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
The next Perry Award is for you, Mike. On Tuesday, we were joined by former Conservative MP Stuart Jackson.
Yes.
And you delivered the good wish of the week.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Stuart, great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Enjoy painting your front door black. Well, he said he was going to.
I know, but I just thought it was so random.
Yes. Do you know, somebody picked up on something that I did say, which I was quite proud of,
mm-hmm.
where when he said he was going to paint his door black, I said, did it used to be red?
Oh.
Now, you don't get that, do you?
No, I don't.
Because there's a Rolling Stones song called Paint It Black.
And
the
yeah.
lyric says,
yes.
I see a red door and I want to paint it black.
Okay.
So that was extremely clever. And one guy picked it up.
Very
picked
good.
It up.
Very good.
Thank
we don't
you.
Deserve you.
I'm on so many
we
different
really
layers.
Don't, honestly.
You know? Anyway.
Well, there's the first something you learn every day. So
yes.
Thank you for that one.
Thank you.
I'll go and listen to that song on the way home
today. All right.
Columnist for the New York Observer and occasional talk radio presenter, Andrew Walker.
Yes.
He's won a Perry Award for providing the sound effect of the week.
That great Western companies are bought up on the cheap by China, assisted by... the list of all our old favourite people.
I loved it when he did that. I was like, why is he doing that?
I just thought, you know, do you think he's prepared this? Like, you know, before the... Because, you know, we booked him earlier in the morning.
Yes.
Do you think that he goes and is like, okay, today I'm going to... Or maybe someone dared him.
Right, to impersonate a bugle.
Maybe soon... Very good. Or maybe someone was like, look, you know, instead of like... saying certain words,
yes.
you just got to do like a silly sound effect.
Yes.
You've got to
I liked it. I'm not against it.
I encourage it.
Yes.
In fact, I am very tempted to just impose this as a rule. Like if you come in as a guest on the show
right.
and it's not like a horrible sad story,
yes.
you've got to do your own sound effects.
I'm all for that.
So, you know, also
yeah.
also the less work for Mark, the better.
Yes,
because,
exactly
you know,
right.
There have been a couple of slip-ups this week, but
oh,
I
dear.
Will not get to that just
no.
yet.
Okay.
And don't worry, dear listener, I have not forgotten. I'm only just pretending because, you know, I've got nothing to look forward to after this show today because we're in lockdown. I finished my jigsaw puzzle with a terrible result.
Terrible result. Are you going to share that?
It's very difficult, but I think it's good to open about this
I thing. Think it's hilarious.
So 1,000-piece jigsaw, right? It's yep. in the aerial view of Barcelona. Gorgeous. I thought, it's great. It's going to remind me of
right.
home. I'm going to hang it on a wall, and I'll wake up every day to it.
Yeah.
It's taking me about a month to complete because I don't have a lot of time, and when I get home, I'm exhausted,
sure.
whatever. So I finished it the other night, and there's two extra pieces.
There's no place for them to go.
They are duplicates, because I found the ones that are duplicates. So there's like two pieces that they're already there, but there is one piece missing. So it's not finished. I can't
That's
finish
brilliant.
It because there's... And we are
this
pretty
is why,
sure.
This is why I don't do jigsaws.
No, I'm quite rightly so.
You know, I would be killing
really
someone.
Annoying.
I would be killing someone.
I am very tempted.
Yeah.
But anyway, I shall not do that. And instead, I'm going to play you not the Meghan impressions because it's not just Meghan anymore.
Right.
Here's this week's compilations of Mike's Meghan and Harry impressions.
And Meghan... We're not going to say anything anymore. Or we're just not going to talk to anyone anymore. Here's a letter that explains it all.
Darling, I found a great song that I want to play you. It's a song about elephants.
I love elephants, Harry. What's the name of the song?
It's Ebony and Ivory. It's all about elephants. It's wonderful. It's fantastic.
I love elephants. Harry. Harry. What's happening, Harry? There are pictures all over the papers of Louis.
Well, he's our nephew. He's our nephew.
I want to be on the front page, Harry. Harry!
He sounds a little bit like Boris Johnson.
Yes.
And Cornelius, a former Lady Shell.
Yes, and also I've detected, listening back to it, I don't know if you've seen Men in Black, the movie.
Yes.
But do you know the bug? When the bug comes down to Earth and
you know
takes
what?
The guy's skin.
I wouldn't know that because I've seen Men in Black dubbed in Spanish.
Oh, okay. Well, he kind of talks... because he's got this kind of weird thing going on with his face.
Oh, dear.
So I think I've taken a bit of that as well.
Yeah, that's good. It's very good. Very enjoyable.
Yes, bad news for Meghan and Harry, of course, because as much as they'd like to stay out of the papers, they're now currently embroiled in what's going to be a pretty nasty lawsuit against the Mail on Sunday, which is going to be reported in huge amount by the tabloids, I'm afraid.
Bless them. Listen, I've got to race for the next one,
yes.
Because I keep talking. Here's another Perry for the forgetful moment of the week.
I've got a couple of good tweets to read out before I go to Gerard, who is in crew. I've got this from somebody who's out and about listening to the show as a new listener, but I can't find it now, so I'm going to have to read it out later on. Let's talk to Gerard instead. Hello, Gerard. There's nothing more annoying.
I know. I don't know what you do with that.
Well, you know what Twitter's like. It moves around all the time, and I get a lot of tweets during the show. And when I think I've got one, and then it shuts itself down and reopens, and it's not there anymore.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Oh, dear. CEO of First Aid for Life, Emma Hammett, wins a Perrier for the answer of the week.
You can't really apply pressure to your head, can you?
Well, you can.
Yeah. And she explained how.
Yeah.
The towel. Founder of Hospitality Union, Jonathan Downey, joined us earlier in the week to talk about how restaurants are coping with the coronavirus crisis. The conversation ended up on pubs, naturally.
Yes.
And you won a Perrier for the lowest standards of the week.
And be served a pint by a bartender from behind a Perspex screen is wearing a mask, you know. That's
really?
Not the right atmosphere we want to create.
I wouldn't care. At this point, you can serve it to me in a prison cell and not let me out for 12 hours. I'll be quite happy with that.
Well, listen.
Steady. I was only joking.
I know you were, but, you know, still
I could,
still
I could
very
murder
standard.
A pint, as they say.
Yes. Well,
you know, normally speaking, we would be out there celebrating after a week like this.
I know. It's ridiculous. Look at... Anyway.
We did discuss breaking out the tent of common sense, but
we
I
did,
don't think
yeah.
that's going to be a, I don't think it's going to be a goer.
It's probably illegal,
yeah,
isn't
probably.
It? Anyway, this week there's no Perry Award for the Talk Radio team of engineers, and
right.
I know they're going to be devastated, so I've decided to still highlight the technical difficulties we've had this week. Chef Shivi Ramitar was, unfortunately, one of the victims.
Listen, you're lucky Lord. if you can even tell what day it is at the moment. I mean, I sometimes have to double-check before I say anything.
Mike?
Yes. Can you still hear me?
No.
Hello? We seem to have lost Chivy. That was at 12:18.
That didn't go well.
Was it?
No.
We seem to have overcome the 12:18 jinx.
Yes, I think that's not a thing anymore.
Okay, good.
However, there's another mystery. There's an incompetence report that needs to be issued.
Okay.
But I don't know who or what to address it to. Although I've got my suspicions.
To be honest, Toby wasn't in this week, so I'm surprised there was any incompetence.
Who?
Toby.
Who?
Okay, whatever you
know. I'm joking. Love you, Toby. I don't know who or what to address it to. Is it human error?
Right.
Is it the machine's fault?
Uh-huh.
Who knows?
In the next hour. 0344-499-1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
It's a bit awkward, isn't it?
Talk Radio.
You're very high. Your standards are getting higher, by the
They're
way.
They're getting very, very,
you know,
very high.
That was just a pause, wasn't it?
Has this clip been tampered with?
It shortened the pause.
You know what? He joked about this earlier. He said he was going to shorten the pause. Have you?
No, I don't think so. He's denying it.
Well, anyway, that's all for the Perrier Awards. There'll be more next week.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio. Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.